My name is Joshua Gibson, and you are listening to the Philosophical Weightlifting Podcast, a show dedicated to promoting a message of critical thinking as it pertains to strength training, nutrition, and well-being. This is done through interviews with experts, high-level athletes, coaches, and people heavily involved in strength sports and athletic development. Pull up a chair, grab a coffee, and let's get on to today's podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Philosophical Weightlifting Podcast. My name is Joshua Gibson, and today's episode's a little different in that we normally focus on topics. This time we are focused on a person or people, and that person is Joanne Ada. How's it going, Joe?
It's going great. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we talked a little bit before this about you not entirely being a morning person and that the programming kind of bleeds over. I'm sure a lot of people can relate. Is that just your style of getting things done?
Yes. I think there's two reasons. One is I tend to work well under pressure. So, kind of leaving things last minute, I am more efficient. It's not really my preferred way of working. Like, I think someday I would like to be far more organized and get all my programming done on Friday or Saturdays, you know. But right now it's kind of that Sunday trying to squeeze everything in. And then, but the other reason is that I am a night person and not a morning person. And, you know, our meeting this morning was for 7:30 a.m. on Monday morning. So yeah, I was telling you that Sunday night programming into Monday morning turnaround was a bit quick for me. So, but being a night person, I was a bartender for 21 years. So from the age of 21 until 42 in San Francisco, bartending was my primary occupation. So I spent pretty much my entire adult life staying up till 3 or 4 in the morning. Wasn't unusual. And I just have never been a morning person. And now I don't stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning, but midnight or 1 a.m. is not unusual for me to be programming and working. And having a kid and just a really busy life, a lot of times that's the only time I find to actually sit down and get certain work done.
Yeah. And I think the thing about that is it's a perfect segue. So I don't know if you're just a natural podcaster, but like we had a lot of conversations when we caught up over the weekend of the Arnolds, and it really intrigued me as to your background, because Max is such a personality in the weightlifting and even the powerlifting world, where I think we almost know as much as there is to know about Max. It's almost hard to have a conversation with him where you learn something you didn't know, unless it's more candid. But with yourself, like I knew so little about you going into it, and then just having a bunch of conversations that spanned, you know, your time, as you said, working in bars, booking shows for bands, like all this really interesting stuff that preceded the powerlifting and weightlifting and strength sports stuff. So maybe you can give us a bit of info about your background before you got into lifting weights, weightlifting, and then becoming, I guess, such a successful lifter and coach, you know, to the point where it's like primarily what you're known for.
Sure, sure. Okay, so in 1970, June 28th, I was born. That is actually one thing that a lot of people don't know, is that I'm 14 years older than Max. So although, you know, Chad always said that he knew there was a 14-year age difference and he thought I was 14 years younger. So, you know, Max has always been sort of the wise old man, even when I met him and he was 24 and I thought he was in his like mid 30s. And then to me being, I guess I'll say youthful. I usually say immature. So an immature 51-year-old. But I had kind of like, I'd say I've lived a couple of lives. So I often say like, oh, in my previous lifetime when I was married to a Norwegian man and living in Oslo, Norway, you know, and people will say like, oh, is that the, you know, bio dad, like Asher's dad? And I'm like, yeah, no, that was actually before Asher. Mm-hmm. So there was a whole nother lifetime before that, because I was 33, I think, when 35 when Asher was born. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so Booking bands. Yeah, I worked in bars and clubs in San Francisco for many, many years. And in the late 90s, got into booking punk and metal bands. I told you the whole story about the biggest band I ever booked was Metallica. So I booked Metallica, a secret show back. When was that, Max? That was, sorry, 2001. He has a better memory than me. He's 14 years younger. So, yeah, 2001, I booked Metallica. But, yeah, that was my primary occupation for a long time. And I was an athlete when I was younger. I grew up running track and cross country very competitively. I was like state champ when I was and went to nationals. I think when I was 13, was second in the nation in the 800, third in the 1500. And then was kind of on this track by like freshman year in high school, like, you know, oh, she's going to go to the Olympics kind of thing. And I was getting recruited by colleges by when I was a freshman and sophomore. And then I think just from what I know now from specializing too young in, right, in that sport, ended up with a lot of injuries. So by the time I was a senior in high school, I was stress fractures in both of my shins and like bulging discs and just numerous injuries that made it difficult to compete consistently. So I still did go, did get recruited by UCLA. Mm. And I did compete for UCLA my freshman year in cross country. But by the time track came around, I was spending 2 hours in the training room, like getting PT done, sitting in ice baths, and it was difficult for me. So at some point in college, I ended up quitting as an athlete. Then, let's see, fast forward, ended up traveling, taking a semester off junior year to visit some friends in Europe. Ended up staying in Norway, fell in love with Oslo there, ended up meeting my first husband, Trond, who's now moved to California with me, but then is now back in Norway. Mm-hmm. And ended up spending a bunch of years booking bands. I guess I'd say partying a lot and not being an athlete. So pretty much from like the age of 19 till 33 was, prime years that I could have been a weightlifter, and looking back on it, wish I was a weightlifter, but instead, was exploring other aspects of my life. Getting tattoos and all sorts of stuff back in the, whatever era that was. And then met Jim Schmitz, from the Sports Palace in San Francisco in, I guess early 2000s, and then eventually started training with him when I was 33. So started, got into weightlifting. I think that must have been 2003. Yeah. Finally started, I still was bartending and competing in the early days, but, I think, when I was 42. Yeah. So about a little less than 10 years ago, stopped bartending and focusing entirely on the gym. But there was quite a bit of overlap there too.
This podcast is brought to you by Onyx Weightlifting Co. I've been very selective about finding sponsors for the show, but after much deliberation, in conversation with Chris and Danny, the co-owner and founder, we decided that Onyx is beyond a great fit to support this podcast. Onyx is a brand built on providing the strongest and most comfortable straps, wraps, belts, and apparel to the weightlifting community, with the leather products handcrafted by the same barbell calloused hands that you have. Make sure you pick up something today at onyxstraps.com using the code PhilWL for 10% off of your purchase. That is onyxstraps.com. onyxstraps.com using the code PHILWL for 10% off of your purchase. And thanks as always for supporting the show. Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get a lot into once you started getting into weightlifting, what that looked like in terms of competing and coaching. But rewinding a bit, you do have and you talk a lot about like heavy metal and music and how you know how much of a role that played in your life. When did you start getting into that type of music? Because personally, I'm also into like more, I guess, like hardcore metal music, and you know that it kind of comes with the weightlifting, powerlifting culture a little bit. But you're like as into it as most people that I've met. So was that something you've just enjoyed, you know, from when you were younger up until this point, or was there a certain point in your life where you kind of started to develop that interest?
Good question. So, I grew up in Palo Alto, and I would say that most of the kids at my school who listened to metal hung out in the stoner section and smoked cigarettes. And so I was sort of really turned off by heavy metal when I was younger. I was a good girl, actually, like in high school. So I was athlete of the year at my high school. I
Wow.
was in all honors classes, graduated 4.0, and was a bit more mainstream. So I was into more 80s music back then. I graduated from high school in 88 and was listening more to like new wave and that kind of thing. And then it wasn't really until I went to Norway, and my ex-husband Trond is very much into metal and punk, and he started sort of introducing me to the ways. So it was funny because a lot of people that I met in college and later were the opposite. They were into metal earlier and then kind of like grew out of it. But I was actually, I think, 19. Yeah, 19 when I started getting into metal. So that was kind of through him, was introduced to Motorhead and AC/DC and Iron Maiden, and that's kind of like the basis of my love for metal is more classic metal. But in booking bands and booking a metal club in San Francisco called Lucifer's Hammer for many years, this underground metal club got much more into some black metal and speed metal, and I think the only metal that we didn't book or like was sort of more nu metal. I don't know, there might be other terms for it now, but
What was it like kind of living in that culture or that I guess that place for so long and then transitioning to, like you said, to getting into weightlifting and getting into strength sports? Obviously there was overlap, but was there much of a difference when you started getting into lifting more seriously?
I mean, I think the lifestyle is very different, right? So, most people at shows and in bands are drinking a lot and partying a lot. And then, when I started doing like, getting more serious into lifting and competing, I did not want to be, partying and drinking, and I wanted to be taking care of my body more. Actually, before I forget, though, side note related. One of my email addresses is heavymetaljoe@gmail.com. And it's pretty funny because that was my booking email.
Oh,
But then
cool.
when I started lifting, it was still like, oh, heavymetaljoe@gmail.com. So I never had to change my email address. I have one more. So I used to drive a 73 Mercury Cougar. And for many years, and I was sort of known for it, like my friends in like the metal scene and everything, I'd see me pulling up in my huge white Cougar with a 351 Cleveland V8 engine with that rumble. And so this was a long time ago, and I'd never heard this term, but my email address for Tai Chi was or is jojocougar@gmail.com. And then I ended up marrying somebody who was 14 years younger than me. So now when I send out those emails, and I've used it for so long with my whole Tai Chi world, which is a whole nother world, people are like, I don't know, it sounds really goofy, you know? And I'm like, hey, I didn't know what that term meant. I don't even think it was a term back then. And I drove a 73 Cougar for like many, many years. So anyway, had to add that in. But so yeah, what was your question? The transition.
Yeah, the overlap, yeah.
Yeah, so it was kind of interesting because I, for a long time, for quite a few years, really didn't tell anyone in the metal scene that I was doing Olympic weightlifting. I kind of just compartmentalized them and just, I don't know, assume like, oh, they wouldn't care about it, you know, and sort of vice versa. And in weightlifting, because I was actually a weightlifter for many years before I really got into powerlifting. I don't think the heavy metal is that associated with Olympic style weightlifting, right? So there wasn't as much crossover. I think had I started with powerlifting, then it would have been a lot easier for me to personally integrate, you know, the two. But instead, I kind of kept them very separate. But there are some like definite good stories. Like I've been on John Norris' podcast, and you know, Max and John and I hung out a lot back in the early days at Cal Strength, and they would come out to the bar that I was working at. I was working at this bar called the Riptide out in San Francisco by the beach. And I was sort of known to dance on the bar every Friday night. And so sometimes I would have these stories like competing at the Redwood Empire on Saturday morning after dancing on the bar until 2 a.m. the night before. And like, I don't know. So it was kind of like fun. I wouldn't, once I started getting more competitive, I probably wouldn't have done that. So there were some like crossovers where I was still able to maintain a certain lifestyle and compete. I don't know. What else about that transition?
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, because just talking to you and seeing, you know, from the outside in, it seems like you have a lot of things on your plate. Like you're involved in the development of a lot of athletes and a lot of projects and a lot of different things that require a lot of work and time. And, you know, it sounds so distinctly different from someone who was like bartending and then kind of got into weightlifting. So at what point were you able to like utilize those skills effectively and develop kind of like the all the success that you guys have had? Because, you know, you're married to Max, or Max is married to you, so I know it's been like a partnership too. But you guys have really done a lot in weightlifting, powerlifting, kind of like the strength sport world. So at what point did you kind of feel like you were able to shift and use that energy effectively to like further your career as an athlete, but then also as a coach too, because you've coached like very successful lifters. So there's a lot of change there, at least what it sounds like.
Yeah. So I think that, it's a good question. I think that, I definitely had gotten very used to a lot of, multitasking, and I actually have always had multiple jobs since I was quite young. Even before getting out of high school, I had multiple jobs. So when I was bartending, you know, there was a period where I was working in fashion and working for Diesel Jeans, but still bartending, and then often had like a server a couple shifts a week at the, restaurant at the diner. And then pretty early on too, I started, I went to school for massage. So I started a massage practice. I have been a volunteer Tai Chi instructor for 23 years. So sometimes when people hear about my life and my schedule, it's like, it's pretty insane. I mean, it's insane to me, and I'm trying to figure out how to simplify. That's like my goal right now, is how to simplify my life. But I mean, so I gained a lot of skills over the years doing that. And then being a mom, being able to bartend and be a mom, because I guess, I didn't quit bartending until I was 42. So I think Asher must have been six. So I was definitely like a mom and still trying to figure out how to, you know, manage his early hours and my late hours and that kind of thing. So there is definitely skill involved in being able to manage a lot on my plate. I think earlier on in my life, I would get bored, or at least I thought I would get bored if I worked a regular 40-hour a week job. Right. And I always had a hard time not picking up more things because I have a whole lit, like, I have so many things I've done. Like, I learned how to ride motorcycles. Then I decided I wanted to be a motorcycle mechanic. So I was going to school for that. Then there was a period where I was like learning Japanese taiko drumming. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to go to like the circus school. And like, so I had so many interests, and Tai Chi was the first thing that sort of slowed me down and got me to stick with one thing long enough to really get into it. And I think that helped me get like stick with, weightlifting and powerlifting. So I think that it has helped me in that way as far as, managing a lot of different, baskets, or I don't know what you want to call it, but and then I do think that there's I say this often, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, which at my age, I'm getting to the point of like, no, it actually might kill me. So I do want to change. I'm trying to cut back on a lot of things. I used to have 20 remote clients on top of, I run the gym. A lot of people don't know that, Max is the namesake of Max's gym in Emeryville, but I actually have run the gym since 2016 when Max went down to Juggernaut. So I run the gym. I have my Tai Chi instruction. I actually still do massage part-time. I do consults. I do one-on-one in person. I coach at the gym. I have my remote clients. Yeah. So I over the last 6 months or year or so, I reduced my client load from 20 clients to 7. I don't know. I guess I like to do a lot of different things, and I'm skillful at it. I can still manage to get it done, maybe not gracefully, or maybe not with the most self-care for myself. But to be honest, like, I was raised in a way where I was pulling all-nighters even in high school, which I look back on and I think is insane. So it's, it wouldn't be unusual for me to like push myself to stay up till 3 a.m. if I had to get stuff done and wake up super early. But like I said, I don't want to burn the candle at both ends like that anymore. So my goal is to slow down on those things. But I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It sounds like you've always just had this like abundance of energy and drive. But, as the years have gone on, you've been able to concentrate that more and more to like more specific things that have like a longer shelf life. So like the gym, coaching, competing, all the projects involved with that, which have like much richer and bigger payoffs. That's really cool to see. As far as like your competitive career or time competing, when did that really start to pick up? And then maybe you can talk me through kind of its development, because you're still butt ass strong. Yeah. You're still really, really strong. So
thanks.
Like to hear about that.
So I started competing. I started training with Jim Schmitz when I was 33. Yeah, in 2003, and started competing in 2004. Until I met Max, I trained 3 days a week doing weightlifting. And honestly, back then there wasn't really much, I don't think there was really social media and very little, I guess there was some stuff on YouTube, but I wasn't like that into it. And I'm definitely not, I call myself a Luddite. So I definitely wasn't eager to get into using computers. So I really didn't know what else was going on around me. And so I just assumed that like you couldn't lift weights more than 3 times a week. So I was doing a very, it's like a beginner program, but I just wasn't training that much. And looking back on it, I think it was because Jim probably knew what my life was like and assumed that it was best for me to only train 3 days a week. I did, I was competing at American Open finals. Back then there was only a finals, and, you know, USA Weightlifting senior nationals, training 3 days a week. So, it was very much a hobby for me. When I met Max in, 2009. So, I'd say maybe the year before that. So about 5 years into lifting, I started getting more into it. And yeah, I think I started. Yeah, I did. I met Max. It was, right after, an American Open in Arizona, which was the first time that I bombed out at a national meet. And knock on wood, the only time I did in weightlifting. It was the first time I had a shot at making a medal at a national meet. And so, like, the fear got to me, and I ended up bombing in the snatch. But I was competing at, you know, a pretty high level. I mean, the numbers are quite different now than they were back then. But, you know, I was still placing in the top five at senior nationals as a masters lifter. And I don't know what I was going to say there, but I was pretty serious about it. I just didn't even know that people trained. I assumed you had to have like at least one day off before, you know, between workouts and things like that. So I started getting more serious then. And then after that competition, I ended up meeting Max, Kelly Rexrode Williams, and Caleb, were good friends of mine. I mean, they are good friends of mine. I just don't see them very much anymore, but I would see them a lot, you know, back in the day at national meets. It was a pretty small community, and they were telling me they were coming out to California, and that there was this new, like, premier weightlifting facility in San Ramon. And I was living in Oakland at the time. I just moved to Oakland fairly recently from San Francisco. And I knew that was about 30 minutes from my house. And I was confused at how there could be some weightlifting facility that I didn't know about, because there were very few and far between back then, right? Places where you could actually have bumpers and platforms and drop weights. And so they told me that Dave Spitz was opening Cal Strength or had opened it. And I knew Dave because Dave was my teammate at the Sports Palace. So Jim Schmitz coached both of us. Yeah. So before Dave started Cal Strength, I remember him talking about opening a gym. So I kind of remember like hearing about this and then like, oh yeah, I haven't been in touch with Dave for a while. And so after that, and just being sort of disappointed with my performance, and at that time I was looking for somewhere where I could train during the daytime, because Jim only coached people in the evenings and on weekends, which was generally when I was either working or with my son, taking care of my son. And so I was looking for somewhere I could go train during the day when he was at probably daycare at that time. Mm-hmm. So I rode my motorcycle out to Cal Strength. And the first day I went out there, you know, I asked Dave if I could come out there and say hi and catch a workout. He told me to come out, and I met Max there. Yeah, sorry, I keep getting off track.
I think this is fascinating. I actually never heard Dave mention that he trained at the Sports Palace. I thought he went from like throwing to Cal Strength. Like, I've never heard anything about him lifting at a different club before that.
Yeah. So, he trained at Cal Strength. I think there were a few throwers there.
Gotcha.
Certainly some from Cal. There were some really strong throwers from Cal there. And then, Dave was there. I don't know how long he was there, but, I'm like, I have a good, Dave Schmitz story, Jim Schmitz story. I don't know if Jim will be mad at me for telling it, but, do you know much about Dave's, lifting career?
Very little.
Okay. So I don't think Dave had a very successful lifting career. So I remember one year, I was at the Arnold. The Arnold used to host the senior nationals there. So it was like a really big, it was a big event, not like it is now where it's just huge. But I mean, it was really only like the top like 10 to 15 in the country in your weight class. So it was a very different thing. It was, kind of like a high level meet to go to. I mean, it's still a great meet, obviously. And it's awesome. There's so many people in the sport now. Anyway, so I was competing at senior nationals there, and I guess I hadn't seen Dave for a while. Maybe he was lifting on his own at that time, or had, I'm not sure exactly the story. I think he'd left the sports palace. And I think Dave had a few meets where he didn't do so well, like didn't make very many lifts. And I think in this meet, he went 0 for 5 and then withdrew from the sixth lift. And I saw, I was talking to Jim and I was like, oh, hey, I didn't know that, Dave Spitz was going to be here. And, Jim looked at me and said, was he? Anyway, what a bum. I don't know where I was going with all that, but yeah. So Dave is the reason why I met Max, basically. And like, Dave was kind of funny in the, when I first met Max, cause I walked in the gym and as I explained, I was going to nationals and, you know, like trying to fight for a medal and that kind of thing, placing in like top five. I got fourth place at nationals and American Open many, many times. Cause I had my friend Jessica G and I like placed fourth place way too many times that we had a joke where we were like, you know, fourth is the new gold, didn't you know? So it was like a saying we had because I missed the podium so many times. Right. But what was the point? Oh, yeah. So for I was, you know, going to these meets as like a quote unquote, you know, national level lifter. And I don't know why I put that in quotes, but and the bar didn't touch me like in the snatch. Oh, right. And there were some weird fixes I was given technically because I didn't understand technique at all. And so the bar went like completely around my knees. I didn't make any contact with the bar. And this is as a 53 kilo lifter. I was snatching in the 60s, which isn't great today, but like for someone who was, you know, almost 40 years old and like didn't know what she was doing, like it was pretty good. And so, yeah, as a fix, because I didn't understand about that I needed to get my knees back, Jim had me look down at the ground. So I love Jim Schmitz.
Yeah.
He's, you know, I wouldn't be here today without him. He's one of my all-time favorite people. He's one of my all-time favorite coaches. In fact, there was a period where I went to Becalf Strength and then I went back to Jim Schmitz and Jim coached me again. So I love him very dearly. And he is my mentor. And whenever I don't know what to do in the weightlifting world, I ask myself, what would Jim Schmitz do? So love him. But for some reason, technically, I wouldn't have my athletes do this, but he had me look down at the ground. And so I had this really weird technique where I started staring at the floor. The bar didn't touch me. And so I started snatching. And Dave says to Max, go fix her. we had some joke in the early days that if Max got me to clean and jerk 100 kilos then I'd get Max's name tattooed on my ass. So
did that ever happen?
Luckily for everyone, I never clean and jerked 100 kilos. So my best clean was 92 kilos and I was a terrible jerker. So that never happened. But
so when you, and I think a lot of people would be interested to hear this, and it's a great part in the story, but when you met Max, was it love at first, you know, cue or love at first lift? Like, how did that relationship develop to where it's like the Ada kind of juggernaut now, no pun intended?
Let's see. So, no, I would not say, at least for me, it wasn't. Actually, I know it wasn't for both sides. I am outwardly bisexual. I worked in lesbian bars and clubs, and one of my best friends in San Francisco, Alicia, she and I started a club. I can tell you all sorts of stories. She and I started a lesbian club called Rugburn back in the 90s. Ellen DeGeneres and Anne Hetch came there. Wow. Yeah, and that was back when they were kind of a big deal in the lesbian scene. So anyway, so what I will say is that I had a certain look back then. And so I rode my motorcycle with they weren't chaps, but they were black leather motorcycle pants that went over my, you know, lifting shorts or tights for protection. But, you know, they were basically like black leather chaps, but without the chaps part. And, you know, all my leather, my bike was this ratted out, anyway, I won't get into that. But anyway, it was all like, I had a very certain look, right? And I walked in the gym and I had there's so many terms I feel like I'm not allowed to say anymore. I'm totally going to be canceled after this. But we used to call them wife beaters. I don't know if you that, right?
Yeah.
So I had my like cut off wife beater. I didn't shave my armpits. And so Max thought I was a lesbian, you know? So,
yeah.
So I can say it wasn't love at first sight. He definitely was not attracted to the unshaved armpits. And, anyway, so we were, and if you've ever seen Max and you ever saw what my type was before, which was definitely, guys with much more, punk metal attire, you know, he didn't carry a knife and, you know, he didn't have studs on his pants and he didn't have piercings or tattoos. He definitely was not my type. And, but we got along really well. And I mean, you've met Max many times, so you know, he's a very likable guy. He's very smart. He's funny. I was always attracted to people who are full of lots of information. So this time it wasn't somebody who, like my ex-husband, who was full of like all of this information about every punk and metal band, but now it was information about lifters and lifting. And I was like super into it. And because I didn't know much about lifting, it was like I was like drawn in. Like I just wanted to like talk for hours. I think also because of that compartmentalizing I had done in my life, where like pretty much outside of the gym, I didn't talk to anybody about lifting. Mm-hmm. I finally found someone that would talk to me about weightlifting and would let me talk about my lifting. And, you know, if you can't tell, I like talking about myself. So, so Max was a great fit. I was about 9 months out of like getting split up with our son's father. And so my friends, when they found out that we were like flirting or dating eventually some months later, were like, oh, that's super harmless. It's your rebound relationship. He's 14 years younger. I was like, this will never go anywhere. He's not my type, you know, that kind of thing. So, so it was pretty early on though, I'd say that we started sort of like flirting with each other, it was mostly like, you know, harmless kind of like jokes, like texting each other. I'd be at the bar and stuff. And he's a funny guy. So, we had a lot of fun. And like, literally, I thought like when I looked at him with his glasses and his khaki shorts and his like flip flops that I was like, well, this isn't going to go anywhere. So this is totally harmless and fun, you know? So, no, not love at first sight, but very early on, we were just got along super well.
Yeah. And was that something where I know you had already been lifting for a handful of years. Did that change kind of like your approach or appreciation for lifting to where you started training more often, you started putting more time towards it? Like when did that kind of switch from being something you did, you know, 3 days a week to being something you did seriously and then being something where that's like sole source of income and kind of like everything you're known for, at least like as far as I'm concerned.
Right, right. Yeah, so it was definitely inspired by starting to train at Cal Strength and meeting Max that changed that. So I'm pretty sure I was still training 3 days a week when I met Max. And then, that was when it just, I think I did know some people were training more than 3 days a week at that point, but it literally might have been just before that. I guess it just never came up or something. Right. And so obviously the guys at Cal Strength were training every day or multiple times a day. And I probably switched pretty early on then to 4 or 5 days a week of training. Eventually I did even go through a period where I was doing double days. Mm. And then I was there when Donnie Schenkel was there and Martine Pashov. Then John North came in and then Glenn Penley came in.
What was that like? Because I know a lot of people know about it, but they weren't there to actually experience it. What was your like opinion or experience of like those days with guys that are now like revered and looked up to, and those days are like the golden days? Did you get that same vibe when you were there?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, I was like super excited to be included in, right, Cal Strength and these lifters. Actually, you know what? I did see Max once before that day at Cal Strength. I was competing probably at my first meet post having Asher, because I remember I brought my friend Michael with me to hang out with Asher. Asher was still in diapers, because I remember changing Asher's diaper between snatch and clean and jerk. I was like, this is interesting. This is a new thing for me. I remember at that meet, like I said, back then it was a very small community of people. So right. It's like, I knew everyone at the meets and I saw these guys I didn't know that were lifting a lot of weight. And I think Martine competed. And then, was there a guy, Bulgarian, maybe Alexei. I don't know if you remember, obviously Max would know, but there was another, I believe, Bulgarian lifter that was over at that time. And they were outlifting everyone, and I was like, somebody's outlifting Freddie Miles, because like Freddie Miles was like right. The biggest deal, or like the Doherty, Paul Doherty or something like that. I saw Max. And he had his glasses on and he had his singlet on and he was lifting these crazy weights. And I remember thinking like, who's this like Clark Kent guy, like Superman, like with his right. glasses on. And I don't remember what he was lifting, but it was like more weight than I'd like seen, certainly at a local meet, but right. probably is lifting close to what I was seeing at like national meets and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. So I did realize later, I had seen him before. But it was, I had not been around that level of lifting. Dave kind of welcomed me in. At the time, there was this sort of like elite team right. kind of thing going on. I have no idea what it's like back then. And I was, pretty green, even though I'd been lifting for a few years, as far as like any of my knowledge around weightlifting, as being any kind of expert. So I was, I guess, sort of in awe, almost like, kind of like, getting that VIP pass, like, right. backstage, right. and then being included in that was a big deal, and then I loved the training. I just yeah. loved it. And like the idea that I could train every day or like 5 times a week or that, and then our sessions were much longer. There was like some overlap, like initially Jim was still writing my program. And then I think Max was just kind of adding to it, cause I had said I wanted to do more. And so he was having me do more. And then at some point I ended up, just talking to Jim about leaving and switching over. I loved it. We did a lot of things that I wouldn't necessarily do now, a lot of just like maxing out 3 times a week. I definitely got stronger. I wasn't very strong with gym. I think my best squat was like, I want to say it was like 105 or something like that.
Really?
I ended up squatting 150 kilos as a weightlifter with max, and friend squatting 120. I was not, I just wasn't very strong.
What was the difference? Just like volume and intensity, just doing more work and.
Yeah. I mean, I think gym, you know, those are two big extremes, right? Like gym's program was really moderate, like low to moderate in volume. Like it was like, I remember my squat workout my back squat workout every week for a long time was 100 kilos for 3 doubles. And it was just like the same, like for a very long time, you know, which I get is like, it was probably enough to maintain the strength. I was like clean and jerking like 78 kilos or something. So it's kind of like, you know, do you really need to squat more than that? I've never really questioned him about his philosophy, but that's just what I kind of assume about it. But it also, you know, I also only like made little strides. Like my progress was very slow towards the end with gym. And so I'd say the total volume, the intensity, the frequency, all of it went up, you know? So of course I got stronger. And then just being in that environment. Right. I mean, that was what I was trying to say earlier. When I was looking for somewhere new to train, it was because I was training by myself at the Sports Palace most of the time, because I think Jim said I could come in there when he wasn't there because I needed to train during the day. So I would go in and turn the lights on in the dungeon, and I was working out by myself. And it's very difficult to train, you know. I think a lot of people are more used to it now with like all the remote coaching, but like for someone who didn't know very much and there wasn't a lot of information or a lot of like, you know, whatever, looking on Instagram and being motivated, like it just wasn't very motivating for me to train by myself. So that was a big reason to move over. But so I don't know. Sorry, getting off track again.
Yeah, no, it's fine. So once you did make the switch and once you started lifting at Cal Strength more, then kind of from that point when things started to get more and more serious, when did it, I guess, consume more and more of your life?
Yeah. So, let's see. I started at Cal Strength in 2009, and then, we started Max's gym in 2012.
Okay.
So, but we definitely, and yeah, so it ramped up pretty quickly, I'd say. It ramped up pretty quickly, I'd say. Within I had 2 shoulder surgeries in 2010, so hard to say exactly why. I think it was a combo of stuff, but some of it I believe was from always leaving all my lifts out front, not understanding the lifts, because I had 2 labrum tears. I had labrum tears in both shoulders. And some of it was from, I believe leaving the lifts out front, both my snatch and my jerk, because I always had a lot of shoulder pain when I was lifting before I met Max. And then I think then when I started lifting at Cal Strength and lifting with Glenn, do you know when Glenn showed up to Cal Strength? Because that for sure was when.
Yeah, I think around 2010, 2011. 2010.
No, yeah, it had to be. No. It was 2009 because.
Was it?
It was because he coached me at my at American Open 2009 at the end of the year. Yeah, so I don't know why I'm asking you. Do you know when my coach showed up? So what happened was when because Max and I started dating like in May of 2009, I believe. Unless I'm getting my years off, but I think it was 2009. And then, by a couple months later, or around that time, maybe Glenn was already even there, Max was coaching me. And then after we started dating, since Glenn was there, I asked Glenn if he'd coach me. And that was just a better, you know, that was a workaround at the time. To get out of that complication. And then with Glenn, we were definitely like, we were maxing out a lot. And I remember it was like the first time I started using straps. And I had never used straps before. And this might seem really obvious, but I don't think I knew how to, I never had lost lifts behind. So I didn't know how to lose lifts behind because everything was always out front. And so when the bar would be going behind me with straps, I would end up pushing the bar out front and letting it go. So I think it was just kind of a perfect storm of probably like fraying over time back in the early days before I got to Cal Strength. And then going to maximum all the time and like, you know, and then not knowing how to use straps properly. And then I kind of remember there was like one time in particular where the bar was like really far back and I like threw it forward. And then I ended up, I still lifted on two torn labrums, but I didn't know they were torn at the time because I remember what the timing was is we were getting ready to go to AO. And I was, you know, slated fourth again, but was really close to third. And I wanted to go get that medal. And I assumed that whatever was wrong with my right shoulder, it was already messed up. And I would compete. And then I would go to the doctor and get it checked out and get it fixed, right? So note to self, don't do that. Because in the end, what happened was I started with a torn labrum in the right shoulder. But because I continued lifting on it, and Glenn was, when I would snatch, I would be uneven, right? Because my shoulder was hurt. And then Glenn would tell me to straighten up my snatch before I stood up. And looking back on it, I think what he meant was like kind of turn my torso. But instead I was, or I guess it was this direction, it was to the left. Instead, I would drive my left shoulder forward.
Gotcha.
And then in the end, I didn't even know this until after I started rehabbing my right shoulder surgery. I started snatching again and I was like, why does my left shoulder hurt more than my right? And in the end, they MRI'd the left and I had torn the other side too. So note to self and to everybody else, I always tell them, if you're hurt, stop lifting. It's not worth going and doing one more meet. But anyway, Glenn coached me there and I remember we were going to maximum, I think like 3 times a week. And we were doing squats like before, squats after, you know, squat at the beginning, there were, you know, maybe front squat in the beginning, back squat at the end. So I don't remember exactly how many days a week I was training, but I might have even been training 6 days a week at that point. Yeah. So it ramped up pretty quickly for me. And
then when you guys
I'm getting hurt.
Yeah. Right. And then when you guys started Max's gym, is that when you transition to being there full time, or were you still training at other gyms and competing?
Training at Max's gym full time?
Well, when you started Max's gym, were you still like traveling to Cal Strength or traveling to other gyms?
Gotcha. I left Cal Strength. Yeah, I'm not sure the timing exactly, but I started coaching. This might be more relevant. I started coaching in 2010 because I was hurt. So I started coaching. Started coaching some weightlifting classes at CFO, used to be CrossFit Oakland. Now it's Community Fitness Oakland, which is where we have our gym now. Mm-hmm. It was at a different location, but I had known Mike Minium, one of the owners there. One of the early CrossFit guys, I hadn't met him before and I knew his gym was near where I was living in the East Bay. So we had talked about me coaching classes there. So I started coaching weightlifting, Olympic weightlifting, specifically for any CrossFit athletes that wanted to join the class there. In 2011, we had a team. We were United Barbell. So what happened was there was kind of like Max did not quite leave Cal Strength. I left Cal Strength sort of for personal reasons. there was a lot of drama going on at Cal Strength at the time. That was when Caleb Ward was there, Glenn Penley, Donnie Schenkel, obviously Max, John North. There was a lot of drama going on. And so I decided to leave. Max and I were together, you know, we were probably living together. So there was a period where he was still coaching at Cal Strength, but sort of kind of on his way out. It was after Max had hurt his wrist. I think Max was just trying to figure out a way to kind of transition out of there financially. We definitely, you know, we were definitely sort of, yeah, kind of paycheck to paycheck back then. So you couldn't just like up and go. So then he was training people. Max was training people at a few different gyms around the Bay Area. And we had a team that was not Cal Strength. So we had started, our friend Jenny Werba had a gym called United Barbell in the city. And so we made a team, United Barbell. And I think we, did we win or just maybe we got top three or something, women's team? Third, we got third place in the country at, I don't know, probably an American Open or something. So we had a pretty good women's team back then. It was small. And then eventually Max wanted to leave and we wanted to leave and we wanted to find our own space. So we found this space at our, at the current CFO. And so during that whole period of time of like, I guess a couple years, I started coaching a little bit more. And then that was the same year that I, 2012 was the same year that I stopped bartending. So once we got the gym going and, I started getting more and more into both weightlifting and powerlifting. 2012 was when I did my first powerlifting meet. Max coached me to break an all-time world record in powerlifting, like in the open, which I had no idea I was that strong, you know, because I was like a mediocre Olympic weightlifter. that year after getting into powerlifting for three meets, also started Women's Strong School at Max's gym, which is a powerlifting based program for women. And pretty much dedicated my life to strength sports starting in 2012.
Yeah, I didn't realize Max's gym has been around for almost a decade now. Because, I guess it's just not the first thing that kind of comes to mind. But when do you feel like things started taking off to the point where it's developed, I guess, like the notoriety that it has now, and you two are kind of like the power couple that you are? Was there like a turning point?
Well, I think the biggest thing was Max going to Juggernaut. It's not to say that Max didn't have his own notoriety before that, because he did. I think he had quite a few YouTube followers, and through Cal Strength, through, you know, podcasts with Mark Bell, things like that. There were a lot of like the people who, you know Max from before Juggernaut. He definitely had, like a following. I had done a AMA on Reddit after I broke the world record in powerlifting. I'm also, if you don't know, one of my favorite hashtags is I am the most hated voice on YouTube. So I am also famous for some other stuff I haven't even mentioned, is from all of the old Cal Strength videos. That's me yelling.
Oh, at yes. Them.
And right. I had never really paid much attention to YouTube comments. But one day, one of our lifters was referred to me as the most hated voice on YouTube. And I was like, what are you talking about? I had no idea. And it's like literally been months that people were on there. There's literally like threads that on YouTube that are like, you know, 97 comments long about what kind of crack smoking, too much makeup wearing, like big hoop jewelry wearing woman I am that reduces male testosterone. So I was like, I thought it was really funny because there's like literally like these insane threads. And like, I mean, there's a lot of like nice guys on there, people on there that have defended me. So I appreciate, you know, whoever those people were, like, do you know who that is? That's his wife. She's like broken a world record in powerlifting and all this stuff. But anyway, yeah. So my, I am known for that too. Sorry, I have a lot of stories. So what was the question?
When Max started to join Juggernaut.
Oh, right.
That's when things kind of changed a little bit more.
Yeah, that's when things took off, really. So although we had our biggest, strongest team at Max's gym right before he left Juggernaut, because it was kind of crazy in the gym at that time. The weightlifting team was, if you've seen our gym, and those of you who haven't, it's like, it is literally 740 square feet. So we had, I think, four platforms, and sometimes we would have 26 people in their training.
Wow.
Yeah. So the, we went to nationals. Yeah, I mean, I think that was when we had like Sharice Chan, whole other story won't get into, but, and then, we had like some strong guys. We had like an 85 kilo lifter who was snatching 300 pounds. And then we had, Jordan had, I remember he had the fifth highest, clean and jerk at nationals that year. So we had a crew of like A session, you know, like AO finals, nationals, lifters. We had a pretty big crew then. But it was literally like, I don't know, sucking the soul out of Max, because we weren't actually running a gym back then. It was literally, it was just like Max, like working for himself. So the gym, he had to be in there all the time, and we didn't really have other coaches other than I was coaching like my programs. And if Max wasn't there, people literally wouldn't come in. And so it just wasn't a business, and it wasn't working for him, because it doesn't work to sit there and like watch every single lift, you know, everyone does. And like, he just couldn't address anything else in his life. And there was like, it wasn't going to go anywhere. You know, it's like the only way to make more money is to coach more people. And like, you just don't even have the capacity to do that. I think at that time we had like double days in the gym, and, he was just in there way too much. So we had this opportunity for, Max to go to Juggernaut. And so, it was an opportunity for me to take over the gym. And because like I have a kid and all these other things in my life, there was no way I could run the gym like he was running the gym. So it was a time for me to hire coaches and have it start, you know, eventually lead into more of a business, which it is today. You know, we can go to the UK now for 2 weeks and the gym runs fine. And when I come back, there's like a couple new members that I don't even know their names, you know, so having like admins and coaches and things like that. So it actually can function on its own as a business now. Chad offered Max a great opportunity because Juggernaut and Chad were much more well known. I'd say social media and YouTube have never been Max's and my specialty. Yeah. So although we were doing a lot of stuff and doing really great stuff, a lot of people didn't know who we were. Like, in fact, like Diane Fu, for example, those who remember Diane Fu, she was my old teammate at the Sports Palace. And like, she would come get training from like Max or training from me. And that was when she was like getting huge. And I remember at one point when we finally started our Instagram, Max said to me, you know, we can sit here and complain about the Diane Foos of the world. Love you as a person, Diane, but, you know, telling a story. We can complain about the Diane Foos of the world, or and watch them make all the money, or we can join them, you know?
Right.
And so that opportunity at Juggernaut was great for Max to become more well-known, because he's such a genius in what he does. Like, he's, you know, one of the smartest men that I know. He's one of the greatest coaches that I know in both weightlifting and in powerlifting. And, you know, it was kind of a shame to have that, you know, only known by 26, you know, local weightlifters right. in our gym. So yeah. So when Max was able to like start doing all the podcasts with Chad and coaching higher level lifters, and basically just get out of our gym and getting out of like running a gym, you know, cause it's like he wanted to be a coach. He didn't want to be a business person, mm-hmm. you know? So that allowed him the freedom, and that allowed for him to start getting more well known. And there were a lot of sacrifices that went with that. It was well worth it. Like he ended up getting an apartment down south. And so he would travel back and forth every week. So he'd spend half the week down in Orange County and half the week up here. So I stayed up here running the gym, and he missed a lot of time with Asher. I mean, we would go down there and visit when we could, or go down there in the summer for longer periods of time. But he was there, I think, from, was it 2015? 16, let's forget what year, 2016 until when? 2019? How many years? 3 years? Is that what? You were only there, how many years were you down there? Two, oh, really? Seems like so much longer. I mean, in a good way, you right. know, I loved going down there and training with Anthony Pomponio. He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's, you know, Southern California is a lot warmer, and you can swim in the ocean down there and stuff. So it was fun going down there. But yeah, so that was when that happened. I guess it was just a couple years, in person. And then, thankfully, for us and our family, Chad decided to shut the gym down there so Max could just work entirely remotely and, you know, come back home. And then I ended up maintaining running the gym. That was also better for us to separate our businesses. So he was
right.
Juggernaut, and I was running the gym. And I mean, I've always like been involved in the Juggernaut coaching as well, because I count for Max in the back rooms. Like, I always manage all the Juggernaut athletes' weight cuts. And then when there were the years that we were at like AO series in Vegas with 47 lifters, wow. you know, any coach that was connected to Juggernaut had to be, coaching lifters, cause there'd be so many different platforms and stuff. So I've always, warmed up athletes for Juggernaut and counted for Max and that kind of thing. And yeah.
And then since the transition away from that, do you think, or do you feel like things have slowed down a little bit? Because I'm sure when Juggernaut was kind of booming, there were just a lot of lifters and a lot of time commitments to that. Have things changed much, or is it, you know, kind of the same work output, but just under kind of your name now?
Let's see. So for me, it hasn't changed that much. I mean, I was officially a Juggernaut coach, and Chad coached me in powerlifting more recently when I came back to powerlifting. So I was both a Juggernaut athlete, both as a weightlifter. Like towards the end of my weightlifting, I was still competing at like AO finals with Juggernaut. So I was both an athlete, weightlifting and powerlifting with Juggernaut. But I did officially become a coach, I think it was like the beginning of the pandemic. I asked to go up there because, on the website, because we were needing to get more remote athletes. So that was when that kind of took off for me. But, so I was only somewhere early into my coaching with Juggernaut, I had my plate full with athletes. And so okay. I had put my remote coaching on hold. Before I actually left Juggernaut, I was on hold. So I was sold out or whatever. So I hadn't been taking on more and more athletes for a while, like 7 or 8 months or something with Juggernaut before I left. It definitely has slowed down as far as like the competitions. I mean, I have right. my own athletes, so it still doesn't totally slow down. But for example, had we had the same kind of team with Juggernaut at this,
yeah.
at the Arnold for weightlifting, then yeah. I mean, this is the first time I've probably been to the Arnold where I had, more athletes than Max. I mean, actually Max only handled like my friend's husband. So that was a new experience for him, which I think he appreciated. It was kind of fun for us because we got to actually sort of hang out at the Arnold. But I, you know, I was coaching in, I guess, five events at the Arnold, and he handled one athlete at the Arnold. So that was a very different experience for him, for sure, and for me. So that part slowed down, but on a day-to-day basis, like, I'm still just as busy as ever. And like, I have new projects. So one of the reasons I left JTS when I did was one, because I wasn't actually, taking any new clients there, but also, it was very restrictive, to be at JTS because Max and I were both powerlifting coaches and powerlifting athletes before we went to Juggernaut. And because, Chad does all the powerlifting programming and club programming and, you know, now the powerlifting AI, which is super successful, Max and I weren't able to put out any of our own programming, you know, no like Train Heroic and, you know, which is understandable. But as someone who I am now more known for powerlifting, I think more recently than I am for weightlifting. And I've had Women's Strong School since 2012. I wanted to push in that direction. So I filled my plate up with some other things. So the big, you know, the big news that everybody knows about, which is like, you know, our huge news, right, is the Weightlifting House AI app. But I've actually been working for quite a while on our own Team 8 app that's for powerlifting. So I have something coming out. I mean, it's both of our programming, but I'm the one who's like managing the project. So we're going to have our own powerlifting Team 8 app coming out soon. And it's not an AI. It's just it's all of our club programming. It's super awesome programs that Max and I have written over the many, many, many years that we have never put on Train Heroic. So, and the app is going to have a lot of cool features. I believe it's, we're going to be able to, you're going to be able to see like statistics and that kind of thing. So it won't do like the fancy stuff that the AI does. But eventually I want to get a lot of, working on getting the video library put together and all that, but it's basically the same programs that we've used to coach, you know, world record breaking athletes like Meg Scanlon, programs that I've written for my athletes who have podiumed at nationals, and have been very successful, down to like programs that I've used. I have a lot of, you know, women who have never touched a barbell before that come into the gym that just want to be strong, you know, and they want to build muscle and lean out. So I have like a 3-day a week basic women's strong school program, for example, that's for like beginners. So there's just like, you know, we have, you know, hundreds of these programs that we were written that have been super successful that I would love to share with, you know, more of the world. So I've been definitely keeping myself busy. I think our focus is just different, you know. Like I told Max loves coaching international level lifters, like we both do. So, you know, I talked to him about, you know, we can just step back and work on some of our own personal things we want to do in our business. And then at some point when things calm down, like we can do that again, right? Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to give anything away, but I don't know if this has been spoken about, but I believe, I'm like, am I allowed to say this? You can edit this out, right? If it needed to be. I don't know what's public information or not, but I've heard Seb and Max talking about possibly even having like a weightlifting team someday. Yeah, you know? So I think there's room for all that. You know, that's one thing that Max and I both love, is that we love the coaching, you know, we love coaching athletes. Like I love coaching athletes. Like, so although it's not always like the money maker, it's something that we're very passionate about. But I feel like this is kind of a time where we want to, put our energy into our business projects for the future that are going to put us in a place where we could, like, I'd prefer to like not coach any of my athletes, you know, I mean, I would prefer to not charge any of my athletes, right? Exactly. I would love to be in a place where, we're, you know, financially in a place where we're making enough money that we, you know, can pay all of our bills and not have to charge higher level lifters and just coach them kind of out of for the love of the sport and for the love of helping athletes excel.
Yeah, I feel like when coaches start out, it's, I want to work with as many people as possible. And then as you get into it, you're like, I want to work with the smallest number, but give them the best product possible and make sure they're taken care of. But you can only effectively do that if you work with the largest amount of people possible to be able to afford that. So it's a really tricky situation. You guys seem to be managing it well. I know the weightlifting AI is going to be just wildly successful, and I know people are really kind of buzzing about that. As far as, you know, I think we've spanned a good amount of time. We've covered, you know, a lot of your life. So I'm wondering, what are some of your biggest accomplishments as a lifter and then as a coach? What are you most proud of what you've done up to this point?
Let's see. In last year, I competed at the IPF World Championships in Sweden. In the M2 category. I have a hard time saying that. I'm that old. Sorry. In the M2 category, I'm not young. As a 57 kilo lifter, and I won gold. So my world championship in powerlifting. And then I set age group world records in the squat, deadlift, and total. So that was my first time doing those things. So I had competed at this was my third world championship. And in the M1 category, I had finished bronze in Calgary, silver in the previous Sweden world championships. And so this was my last time I went to go represent U.S. Virgin Islands instead of Team USA. You probably know some of that story. I'm not going to go into it. But I went there to go win my first powerlifting world championship and set my first powerlifting world records.
What were the numbers?
The numbers were not my best. Let's just say it was not ideal circumstances. But I'll tell you my numbers I qualified for. It was just like a perfect storm of things at the meet. And so sure. We kind of went in to just go do what I came for, which was to do those three things. I mean, I'll tell you, like I squatted 128 kilos and then I passed on my third. We basically just went in it was one of those days where you just wake up and it's like all of the jet lag hit me all at once. Yeah. And I just felt totally weak. And we just had a lot of also personal stuff going on back home, family stuff going on. So it was kind of a hard time. So at Nationals a few months earlier, last summer, I squatted 137.5. Mm-hmm. And then I needed 128 to break the world record. So I took that and then I just passed on my third because it was like I wasn't going to go make any PRs that day. So I decided, right, let's go do my number one goal was to win. My number two goal was to get as many of those records as I could, which was the ones that I was capable of was squat, deadlift, and total. Right. So deadlift, my best in competition is 180 kilos and I deadlifted 170. I'm like, I can't even remember. I think I pulled 170. Yeah. I pulled 170. We kind of shifted everything after we saw how my meet was going. So, cause originally I think I wasn't even going to bother taking 170. I was going to go straight to 175 on my second to beat the record because I was like, in no world would I not be able to pull 175. And it's very good that we dropped it to 170 because I think the record was 168. So I pulled 170 for the record and that got that was just enough to beat the total record. And then 175 on my third didn't even move off the ground. So yeah. So my numbers weren't great, but my goal, I hit achieved all the goals that I went there to do. I can't remember what I totaled there. It was like not a good total, but I've totaled 400 kilos was my best total. And I think at the few months before I totaled 397.5. And I have all the American records in USAPL for at last year's nationals for, and not the bench. The ADAs are not known for their bench press. So, yeah, but, squat, deadlift, and, total American records in USAPL. But the reason why it's the combo. It's not just that meet. That was my proudest moment. But, it was that I had always had this goal of being world champion and having world records in two sports. Yeah. So my last competition that I did in weightlifting was in 2017. Max and I and some of our lifters went to New Zealand for the World Masters Games. And we always refer to that as the old people Olympics. It's the Masters Olympics. So like there's the Masters World Championships every year, but the World Masters Games follows the Olympic years, and it's the every 4 years with all the different sports. And so I competed in New Zealand there, and I finished there with all-time PRs at the age of 47 in weightlifting. All-time PRs in snatch, clean and jerk, and total.
Wow.
I guess it was 58. Yeah, 58 kilo lifter. I think I still hold those records because they changed the classes. So that was kind of nice. Yeah. So that was, I snatched 71 kilos and I clean and jerked 86 kilos at the age of 47 in the 58 kilo class. So at that meet, I won gold and everything. That's a good story. I missed winning Grandmaster in New Zealand. So some people know this story. Grandmaster is like by formula across all weight classes. There's like female Grandmaster and male Grandmaster. And I lost to Laurel Hubbard.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was an interesting experience. So yeah. I actually got destroyed by Laurel Hubbard. It was funny because I edged out Christy Brewer, who's a very strong athlete. Yeah. I was like the last time I ever would have beaten Christy Brewer, but I edged her out by like, you know, a point or two. And then Laurel Hubbard was like way past us also. So I was second place to Grandmaster at that competition. So so that was kind of like a big goal of mine, was to be able to do that in two different sports. And Max actually made a very like sweet post that surprised me like the next day about how he hasn't, you know, there aren't very many people to have done that, to be world champion in two different sports to compete at that level. And so I think that combo is the proudest thing that I've done.
Yeah. And then as far as like your coaching accomplishments, which are you most proud of?
Coaching accomplishments. You know, like just recently coaching Tiny Tiff and Sally French to do super total at the Arnold was amazing. Tiff was third place in the open at Raw Nationals, and she's newer to weightlifting, so she doesn't have that much time in weightlifting. But she made PRs in all five lifts. So snatch, clean and jerk, squat, bench, deadlift. So that was pretty awesome. You know, I have a lot of proud moments with Max side by side, you know, like being the weight cut coach for Kiana Welch and Shakaja Johnson at the competitions when they broke American records. So that's, you know, I didn't coach them in their programming, but being there and that's a part of it. So those are very proud moments for me. And then, you know, I'm so proud of like all levels of my lifters. Yeah. So Muhammad is one of my lifters that I've coached since he was 17. He's actually like my poster child. So he's now 21 and about 2 or 3 years ago, he moved away. So now he's been my remote athlete, but he trained in person. To give you context, Muhammad, I used to outlift Muhammad when he showed up at the gym. And this weekend, he squatted 270 kilos.
Wow.
He benched 140 kilos. And he deadlifted 272 and a half on his second, pretty easy, but then he tore his hands and then withdrew from the ninth lift. So he went 8 for 8, put 37 and a half kilos on his total.
Yeah.
He's basically doubled all of his numbers since I started coaching him.
Yeah.
Is obviously a lot heavier. He tells me that he's got stretch marks with my name on them. So super proud of him. He's come so far. He listens to everything I do. So I'm sure there's more, but I think that, you know, Tiff getting third at Raw Nationals was a big deal because I think she came in slated maybe like fifth or sixth. And it was funny because what's that podcast? Is it King of the Lift?
King of the Lift.
Yeah, King of the Lift. So King of the Lifts did a pregame kind of rundown of all the A sessions kind of thing. And when they were going through her class, she's in the 47 kilo class. They were going through, you know, Heather Connor has been like the top 47 forever. And they're talking about her. They're talking about these other girls. And they kind of were like, and then there's this like Tiffany Leong. Well, we're not really sure who she is. I mean, she could make fifth place. And at Nationals, they do podium top five. But, you know, I don't know. I think we all know that top three is really what you want, right?
Right.
So
what medal do you get for fifth place?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it's – I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. What color is fourth or fifth? I don't know. I've never gotten fourth or fifth in powerlifting.
Flex.
What's that? Is it? Oh, Max is brass. It's a paper cardboard metal. I don't know, but so anyway, it was really cool for her to like sneak in there. In fact, our friend Jeremy, very strong powerlifter, was there, and he was the one who played that for Tiff beforehand to just get her all fired up to like make sure people knew who she was. So she didn't cut weight for the Arnold because it's scored by dots, which is kind of like the new Wilks. Another hugely proud moment, she took my record off the record board at Jesse's. Yeah. And she squatted 142 and a half at 50 kilos. So she is a badass squatter. She's got world records. She has world records in like the 97 and 105 class, non-IPF records, but all-time records. So she's very strong before I started coaching her. So Jesse Burdick is her first coach. So I don't take claim to all of that. She has done very well. And so she squatted 142 and a half. I hope this isn't a secret, but Heather Connor has been sort of like the poster child in USAPL and it's, you know, just been miles ahead of the other lifters. But our plan is to go to Raw Nationals, and they changed the weight classes. So it's 48 now. So they bumped Heather's record up. I believe Heather might be going PA. Which is the new IPF federation. So our goal is to go get Heather Connor's squat record, because I think it's 143 in the 48 kilo class. She did it as a 47. So that would be really cool, because I don't think anybody's touched Heather's records in years. So lots of fun coaching stuff in both sports, and the super total stuff is really fun too.
Yeah. And you mentioned a little bit about what the plans are. You mentioned the app and kind of developing that. As far as future projects or future kind of plans of work, what can people expect from you?
Yeah. So I'd say the app, if all goes well, the powerlifting app, will be out in May. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to, my goal is to get it out before Raw Nationals in Vegas. So I'd like to have it out for that competition. I'm still on the fence as to whether or not I'm going to compete at Raw Nationals. I have 4 athletes that I'm coaching there. So, yeah, I kind of want to decide whether or not I'm going to do that, but I love competing, so I might be there. So the powerlifting apps, which are going to have the powerlifting app, which is going to have a whole bunch of different, club programming on it. Obviously, our big push for weightlifters is to the weightlifting AI, which is, just going to be amazing. And then I want to focus on my smaller list of remote athletes. And then we still have the gym. So if anybody's near Berkeley, Oakland, Emeryville, San Francisco, then we have a lot of different programs in the gym, weightlifting technique classes, powerlifting, super total weightlifting team, women's strong school, youth program. And, or if you want to swing by or come do personal training, Max and I both do remote consults mm-hmm. online. So I have some athletes that I work with to do remote consults. I can do consults on water cuts and remote coaching and water cut coaching and weight cut coaching. It's not my favorite. I'm very good at it, but it's another one of those things where it's like so much time invested. I'm not very efficient at it, but on consults, I can give people like the bare bones of it and enough to have them do it on their own. So I think that those are the main projects. Yeah, the main thing that I want to focus on are my remote athletes and, helping with like the promotions of the AI and then my powerlifting app our powerlifting app. It's going to be under Teammate. It's both of our programs. Yeah. Yeah. Our website is, can I say that? Is that time? Is it time for that?
Yeah, it's time for it. Yeah, it's perfect. Perfect segue.
So our website is teamada.com. And that is kind of the overarching website of both Max's and my projects.
Gotcha.
And then my Instagram is JoanneAda7. That's my Instagram handle. And you can reach me through the website. All of my offerings like consults and one-on-one in person are up there. Max's offerings, Max still coaches one-on-one remote athletes. So you can reach him through our website there. And yeah. And if you're a weightlifter, get on that weightlifting AI. I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, I think there's literally something for everyone who's involved in strength sports. So for people listening, I'd recommend you go check out, you can just start at the Instagram channels and work your way through that. The YouTube, there's so much content and so much information, and then so many different options based on needs, availability, resources. So I would implore that. Joe, I think this was a fantastic chat. I feel like everyone was able to learn so much about you, and I think it just helps appreciate the achievements you've been able to have, and then also what you've been able to do for the powerlifting and weightlifting world just in general. So much respect from me. For people listening, you can follow me at Josh_PhilWL on Instagram, and we will catch you guys on another episode of the Philosophical Weightlifting Podcast.